The broadcast of the reading of the Richmond Times-Dispatch on the Virginia Voice is made possible due to the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Welcome to the reading of the Tuesday, April 22nd, Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Alex Childress for the Virginia Voice. We'll have about 25 minutes of front page and local news, followed by about 25 minutes of news from the nation and world. After that, a half hour of editorials, columnists, and letters to the editor from the opinions pages, as well as other news as time allows. Our final half hour, we will begin with the obituaries, and then whatever else we have time for. But before all that, the three-day Richmond area forecast. Today, a high of 80 degrees and an overnight low of 59 degrees, cloudy with a stray thunderstorm. Tomorrow, a high of 78 degrees and an overnight low of 51 degrees, mostly sunny and pleasant. Finally, on Thursday, a high of 77 degrees and an overnight low of 53 degrees, with sun through high clouds. Your readers for today are Fred Danz and Lindsay Ryland.
Thank you, Alex. Good morning, everyone. The front page of today's Times-Dispatch displays a full-page photograph of Pope Francis. Pope Francis is waving as he delivers an Easter blessing on April 21st, 2019 in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican. The first Latin American pontiff who ministered with charm and humility died Monday at the age of 88. And here's the accompanying article for that photograph. Pope Francis dies at age of 88. Latin America's first pontiff led with humble style. This article is from the Associated Press by Nicole Winfield. Pope Francis, history's first Latin American pontiff, who charmed the world with his humility and concern for the poor, but alienated conservatives over climate change and critiques of capitalism, died Monday. He was 88. The Vatican said Francis died of a stroke that put him into a coma and led to heart failure. Bells tolled in church towers across Rome after the announcement, which was read out by Cardinal Kevin Farrell, the Vatican Camerlengo, from the chapel of the Domus Santa Marta, where Francis lived. At 7:35 this morning, the Bishop of Rome, Francis, returned to the home of the Father. His entire life was dedicated to the service of the Lord and of his church, Farrell said. Francis, who suffered from chronic lung disease and had part of one lung removed as a young man, was admitted to Gemelli Hospital on February 14, 2025, for a respiratory crisis that developed into double pneumonia. He spent 38 days there, his longest hospitalization of his 12-year papacy. He emerged on Easter Sunday, his last public appearance, a day before his death, to bless thousands of people in St. Peter's Square, drawing wild cheers and applause. The death now sets off a week-long process of allowing the faithful to pay their final respects, first for Vatican officials in the Santa Marta Chapel and then in St. Peter's for the general public, followed by a funeral and a conclave to elect a new pope. From his election on March 13, 2013, the Argentine-born Jorge Mario Bergoglio signaled a different papacy, embracing refugees and the downtrodden, especially following the troubled tenure of Pope Benedict XVI, who surprisingly resigned. But conservatives grew increasingly upset with Francis's progressive bent, outreach to LGBTQ+ Catholics, and crackdown on traditionalists. He badly botched a notorious case of clergy sexual abuse in 2018. The crowd-loving, globe-trotting pope also navigated the church through the coronavirus pandemic from a lockdown Vatican City, declaring, "It has shown us that we cannot live without one another, or worse still, pitted against one another." In his final will, Francis confirmed he will be buried at St. Mary Major Basilica in a simple underground tomb with only Franciscus written on it. The basilica, which sits outside the Vatican, is home to Francis' favorite icon of the Virgin Mary, to whom Francis was particularly devoted. Elected on a mandate for reform. Francis was elected on a mandate to reform the Vatican bureaucracy and its finances, but he went further, shaking up the church itself without changing its core doctrine. Asked about a purportedly gay priest, he famously responded, "Who am I to judge?" A welcoming message to the LGBTQ+ community and those who felt shunned by the church. Francis changed church positions on the death penalty, declaring it inadmissible in all circumstances, modified its stand on nuclear weapons by saying their possession was immoral. In other firsts, he approved an agreement with China on bishop nominations that had vexed the Vatican for decades, and charted new relations with the Muslim world by visiting the Arabian Peninsula and Iraq. But his real revolutionary change in emphasizing the church should be a refuge for those on society's fringes, migrants, the poor, prisoners, and outcasts. Evoking St. Francis of Assisi. Francis lived in the Vatican Hotel rather than the Apostolic Palace, wore his old orthotic shoes rather than the traditional red loafers, and used compact cars. If being the first Latin American and Jesuit Pope wasn't enough, he was the first to name himself after St. Francis of Assisi, the 13th century friar known for personal simplicity, his message of peace, and care for society's outcasts and nature. His first trip as Pope was to the Italian island of Lampedusa, epicenter of Europe's migration crisis, and he consistently visited countries where Christians were persecuted. Missteps on priestly sexual abuse. But over a year passed before Francis met survivors of priestly sexual abuse. Victims' groups questioned whether he understood the scope of the problem. His papacy's greatest crisis came in 2018 when he discredited Chilean victims of abuse and stood by a bishop linked to their abuser, a notorious pedophile. Francis later invited the victims to the Vatican for a personal mea culpa and summoned the leadership of the Chilean church to have them resign. Another crisis erupted over ex-Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, the retired Archbishop of Washington and a counselor to three popes. Francis had sidelined McCarrick after an accusation he had molested a teenage altar boy in the 1970s. The Vatican's one-time U.S. ambassador, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, still accused Francis of rehabilitating McCarrick early in his papacy. Francis eventually defrocked McCarrick after an investigation determined he sexually abused adults as well as minors. Two popes in the Vatican. Francis' election after Pope Benedict XVI's stunning decision to resign and retire, the first in 600 years, created the unprecedented reality of two popes on Vatican grounds. Despite the potentially uncomfortable shadow, Francis embraced Benedict as an elder statesman and advisor until his December 31, 2022 death. Francis didn't pursue the anti-abortion agenda of Benedict or St. John Paul II, although he starkly likened it to hiring a hitman to resolve a problem. But he reversed Benedict's signature liturgical legacy by reimposing restrictions on celebrating the Latin Mass. He said he was healing divisions, but conservatives and traditionalists blasted the move as an attack on them and the old liturgy. Francis slowly shifted the balance of power from doctrinaire church leaders to more pastoral ones, appointments reflected in choosing cardinals who will elect his successor. His boldest anti-corruption steps were wrestling the Vatican's bureaucrats into financial line, limiting compensation and ability to receive gifts, and eliminating obstacles to prosecuting cardinals criminally. He authorized a police raid of Vatican offices that led to a criminal trial into a botched London real estate venture. Economic justice was important to Francis, who said he wanted a poor church that is for the poor. Francis criticized trickle-down economics in his first major teaching document, saying the powerful feed upon the powerless, without regard for ethics, the environment, or even God. He elaborated on that in an ecological encyclical, which denounced the structurally perverse system that exploited the poor and risked turning earth into an immense pile of filth. A religious calling at age 17. Born in Buenos Aires, Jorge Mario Bergoglio was the eldest of five children of Italian immigrants. He credited his grandmother, Rosa, with teaching him how to pray. He said he decided on the priesthood at 17, entering the diocesan seminary 4 years later. In 1958, he switched to the Jesuit order, attracted by its missionary tradition and militancy. He was named head of the Jesuits in Argentina in 1973 at age 36. His tenure coincided with the start of Argentina's 1976-83 dictatorship and dirty war when the military waged a brutal campaign against left-wing guerrillas and other regime opponents. Like many, Bergoglio didn't publicly confront the junta. He was accused of effectively allowing two slum priests to be kidnapped and tortured by not publicly endorsing their work. Only in a 2010 authorized biography did he recount how he persuading the family priest of dictator Jorge Videla to call in sick so that he could say mass in the junta leader's home and successful appeal for mercy. This article was from the Associated Press by Nicole Winfield. Pope Francis dies at age of 88. Brad?
Page 2 has an article by Anna Bryson, Richmond Times-Dispatch staff writer. Herity drops out of Lieutenant Governor race. Fairfax Supervisor Pat Herity, one of the two Republicans seeking the party's nomination for Lieutenant Governor, has dropped out of the race due to health concerns following heart surgery last month. John Reed, a longtime conservative talk host, show host on Richmond's WRVA radio, is now the Republican nominee by default. Herity previously said he has a hereditary heart condition and on March 9 experienced shortness of breath, minor chest pain and swelling after his weekly hockey game. On March 13, he underwent a corrective surgery. It is with a very heavy heart that today I am announcing the end of my 2025 race for Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, Herity said in a statement on X. Since my heart surgery on March 13th and the subsequent complications, I've been working hard to regain my strength and return to the campaign trail. He added, I have come to the realization that my ability to get back to the 150% that I was giving to run a statewide race and that will be necessary to win in November is not possible at the near future. The GOP ticket is now set, with Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earl Sears for governor, Reed for Lieutenant Governor, and incumbent Jason Mayers seeking a second term as Attorney General. The slate is among the most diverse in a major party has fielded in Virginia. Earl Sears is the first black woman elected to statewide office. Mayers was the first Hispanic American elected statewide, and Reed would be the first openly gay person elected statewide if successful in November. I am sure all Virginians join me in praying for Supervisor Pat Herity and his continued recovery, Reed said in a statement. With Pat's selfless decision today, our party now has an early opportunity to unify behind a historic, solidly conservative, reasonable, and responsible GOP ticket led by Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears and Attorney General Jason Mayers that will continue to build on Governor Youngkin's success. As I hope my travels across the state and work ethic have demonstrated, I take my new responsibility as the Republican nominee for Lieutenant Governor seriously, Reed said. I will continue to work hard to be worthy of this opportunity and to earn every vote of Republicans, Democrats, and all those looking for a voice across Virginia. Republican Party of Virginia Chairman Senator Mark Peek, a Republican from Lynchburg, said, it looks like our ticket is set. I was glad we didn't have to go through any bloody primary. I look forward to watching the Democrats batter each other in the Lieutenant Governor's race and the Attorney General's race. In the June 17 primary, Democrats will choose nominees among six candidates for Lieutenant Governor and two for Attorney General. Herity had raised $540,273 in the first quarter, more than any of the other seven candidates for Lieutenant Governor. And that was an article by Anna Bryson of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Herity drops out of Lieutenant Governor race. Lindsay?
Moving to page A5 now. Rites and Rituals, Pontiff's Funeral, Burial, a Well-Planned Tribute. This article's from the Associated Press by Nicole Winfield. The death of a pope sets in motion a series of carefully orchestrated rites and rituals well before the conclave to elect his successor begins. They involve the certification of death and public display of his body for the faithful to pay their respects, followed by the funeral and burial. Pope Francis, who died Monday, revised various rites last year, simplifying the funeral rituals to emphasize his role as a mere bishop and allowing for burial outside the Vatican in keeping with his wishes. But the core elements remain, including the three key moments that must be observed between the death of a pope and his burial. The reforms are incorporated into the slim red volume, Ordo Exequiarum Romani Pontificis, Latin for Rite of Burial for Roman Pontiffs. Why were changes to the funeral rite necessary? While popes often tinker with the rules regulating the conclave that elects their successor, a revision of the papal funeral rites hadn't been undertaken since 2000. The changes became necessary after Francis expressed his own wishes and after Emeritus Pope Benedict XVI died on December 31, 2022. For Benedict, the Vatican had to work out the novelty of a funeral for the first retired pope in 600 years. A few months later, Francis revealed he was working with the Vatican's Master of Liturgical Ceremonies, Archbishop Diego Rovelli, to overhaul the entire Book of Rites to simplify them. In explaining the reforms, Rovelli said the changes aim to emphasize even more that the Roman pontiff's funeral is that of a pastor and disciple of Christ and not of a powerful man of this world. The Declaration of Death. The three main stations or moments occur first in his home, then in St. Peter's Basilica, and then in the place of burial. The reform allows for the formal confirmation of death to occur in Francis' personal chapel rather than his bedroom. It is unclear why the change may be more practical than anything since Francis chose to live in a small suite in the Vatican's Santa Maria Hotel rather than the Apostolic Palace. He has a personal chapel at Santa Marta. Upon the Pope's death, the head of the Vatican Health Services examines the body, ascertains the cause of death, and writes a report. The body is dressed in white. The body rests in the Pope's personal chapel for the ritual pronouncement of death, presided over by the Camerlengo, the Vatican official who runs the Holy See administration between the death or resignation of one pope and the election of another. The Camerlengo is American Cardinal Kevin Farrell, one of Francis' most trusted aides. In a change from the past, the rite no longer requires the body to be placed in the traditional three coffins made of cypress, lead, and oak. Now the pope's body is placed in a wooden coffin with a zinc coffin inside. The pope is dressed in red liturgical vestments, his mitre, the traditional headdress of bishops, and the pallium woolen stole, a kind of scarf. The paschal candle, a large decorated candle used at Easter, is placed nearby. The Camerlengo drafts the formal declaration of death, attaching the certificate that was prepared by the health service chief. The master of liturgical celebrations, Rovelli, then decides when other faithful can pay their respects before the coffin is moved to St. Peter's Basilica for public viewing. Once in the Basilica. When the body is brought into the Basilica, the Litany of Saints chant is sung. The Camerlengo leads the procession. In another change, the pope's body is no longer placed on an elevated bier. Rather, the simplified wooden coffin is placed facing the pews with the paschal candle nearby. The sealing of the coffin. The night before the funeral, the Camerlengo presides over the closing and sealing of the coffin in the presence of other senior cardinals. A white cloth is placed over the pope's face. A bag containing coins minted during his papacy is placed in the coffin, along with a one-page written account of his papacy, known in Italian as a rogito, a word indicating an official deed. It is read aloud by the master of liturgical ceremonies and then rolled up and slipped inside a cylindrical tube that is placed inside the coffin. Another copy is kept in the Vatican archives. The covers of both the zinc coffin and the wooden one bear a cross and the papal coat of arms. Francis' coat of arms, which he kept from when he was a bishop, features a shield and the monogram of his Jesuit order with the words Miserando atque eligendo, Latin for having had mercy, he called him. It comes from an episode in the Gospel where Christ picks a seemingly unworthy person to follow him. The funeral and burial. The funeral is presided over by the dean of the College of Cardinals, or, if that is not possible, by the vice dean or another senior cardinal. The current dean is Italian Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, 91. The vice dean is Argentine Cardinal Leonardo Sandri, 81. Francis earlier this year extended both of their 5-year terms rather than appoint new ones. Francis' reform allows for burial outside the Vatican with the Camerlengo presiding. Various seals are impressed on the coffin and it is placed inside the tomb. Francis said he wants to be buried not in St. Peter's Basilica or its grottos, where most popes are buried, but in the St. Mary Major Basilica across town. His choice reflects his veneration of an icon of the Virgin Mary that is located there, the Salus Populi Romani, Salvation of the People of Rome. This article was on page A5 from the Associated Press, Rites and Rituals. Fred?
And back to page 2, an article by Dave Ress, Richmond Times-Dispatch Sheriff Writer. Co-op wants to keep data centers from boosting bills. Demand for power from proposed data centers is already poised a swamp Rappahannock Electric Cooperative system, but the customer-owned utility says it has a way to avoid hits to its current ratepayers' bills. Data centers' need for huge amounts of power, recent proposed facilities around Richmond, would use the same amount of electricity as tens or even hundreds of thousands of homes, have alarmed legislators who worry Virginia consumers and businesses will get stuck with the bill for upgrading the grid to handle that electricity. Environmentalists say meeting data centers' needs would derail Virginia's clean energy goals and the state's effort to slow climate change and sea level rise. But Governor Glenn Youngkin has said data centers will be a key driver of Virginia's economic growth. Local governments are enthusiastic about the millions of tax dollars the facilities represent, even after taking account of the state's tax breaks for them. Rappahannock's proposal to protect ratepayers calls for a special rate for big users in the cooperative's mainly rural territory, which stretches from the Middle Peninsula's Essex County west to Frederick County in the far wet northwestern corner of the state, and includes parts of Hanover, Goochland, Louisa, and Caroline counties. It also includes parts of Stafford, Spotsylvania, Culpeper, Orange, Madison, Greene, and Albemarle counties. Virginia is the largest data center market in the world. New data centers expansion is shifting into counties along the I-95 corridor and central Virginia, including areas within RFC's service territory, said Brian Doherty, the cooperative's managing director of regulatory affairs, in a filing with the State Corporation Commission. Those proposed new facilities' need for electricity would exceed the cooperative's current peak demand of approximately 948 megawatts, he said. In fact, they would need more power than the old Dominion Electric Cooperative can deliver to its 11 member cooperatives in Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, including Rappahannock, the company's attorney, Timothy E. Biller, told the SCC. Rappahannock's plan is to build data centers and other big users a monthly charge based on how much capacity, wires, and substations are needed to safely deliver power. This portion of the bill is based on how many megavolts, amperes, a measure of the total power in an electric current, are required to serve a facility. Data centers also would pay the cooperative an upfront sum equal to the installed cost of the equipment. The data centers would also have to put up collateral to guarantee that they pay their bills. The cooperative would buy the electricity a data center needs on the wholesale market, run by the PJM Interconnection, the operator of the regional high-voltage grid that stretches from New Jersey to Illinois and south to North Carolina, and would charge the data center for that. The PJM runs a market where utilities can buy and sell power to one another, or buy electricity from independent power plants, all in order to make sure the electrons pulled out of utilities' wires is balanced with electrons flowing into the utility systems. Keeping these wholesale purchases for data centers separate from the power it feeds the rest of the customers, along with the upfront payment of and capacity-based monthly charge, are all ways to keep costs of serving data centers from hitting other customers. In addition, the new approach means that if a data center shuts down, the cost of the equipment and wires installed to serve it won't fall back on other customers, Doherty said. The data center rate is meant for customers needing at least 25 megawatts of electricity, enough to power 6,250 homes, and expecting to use at least 75% of that power 24 hours a day. No current customers meet these requirements. As an example of what a relatively typical data center would pay under Rappahannock's proposed rates, the Cooperative Director of Rates and Regulatory Affairs, Jennifer Sebastian, calculated a monthly bill for a 268-megawatt facility at $666,573. Early this month, Dominion Energy, the state's biggest power company, asked the SEC to approve its proposed new rate for big users, such as data centers. The terms for those rates include protection for consumers to ensure they are not stuck with the rest of the substations, power lines, and generating plants needed to supply these large customers. Under Dominion's plan, high energy users would be required to make a 14-year commitment to pay for the amount of power they request, even if they end up using less. And that was an article by David Rest of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Co-op wants to keep data centers from boosting bills.